Dear brothers and sisters, good morning. This is a rather important weekend for me in my personal life every year, not only because of the 4th of July, which was lovely and certainly a great time for our town. I'm always happy for that. And of course, it was my third anniversary of being named your pastor. But today, July 6th, which is the anniversary of the martyrdom of St. Thomas More. It's the day St. Thomas More died. And as you know, I was the pastor of St. Thomas More Church in Eunice for 9 years. I haven't talked about him much for the past 3 years, but now we're 3 years out, so I can talk about my ex. All right, is everybody in? Okay, good. Because he's an important saint, a great saint, and he very helpful to me in my own life, and I'd like to talk about him some. But in general, this weekend, I want to talk about the combination of the 4th of July and Thomas More along the lines of freedom of religion and the separation of church and state. Because this is what he died for, this is what our founding fathers fought for, and I think it's something that is clearly contained in the readings today. It's the implication of the readings today. So let me explain that last part. In all of our readings today, in the first reading we hear about all the nations coming to Jerusalem, in the responsorial psalm, let all the earth cry out to God with joy. In the second reading we hear, it doesn't matter if you're circumcised or uncircumcised, it's all about a new creation. And then finally in the gospel we hear about Jesus appointing 72 others, which I'll explain in a second. In all of our readings, we get the sense that the faith that God wants is universal. The Greek word for that is Catholic, but universal. Now, that seems obvious to us. Like, oh yeah, it doesn't matter what country you belong to, it doesn't matter what race you are, it doesn't matter where you're from, of course you can have the faith. That's weird. Okay? In the history of the world, and even still today, that's weird. Almost no other religion looks at it like that. Potentially Buddhism. But every other religion is deeply connected to the nation you belong to the people you belong to the culture you were raised in. Deeply connected. There's a connection between being born and raised in India and being Hindu. They think that you're not really Indian unless you're Hindu. There's a connection between growing up in Japan and practicing Shinto. For till like the mid-1900s, if you were going to work in the Chinese government, you better be Confucian. It's weird. And we hear, I mean, there are all these, you know, headlines that make everybody want to freak out because they say it in such terrifying language that, you know, every time there's a Muslim majority, they want Sharia law. Yeah, because every other religion does that except us. And then even sometimes we try to do that too. But I think it's a violation of what Jesus is actually trying to do. Because the reality, the difference of what Christianity brought into the world was that religion could be theoretically separate from government, could be separate from culture, could be separate from ethnicity, could be separate from who your mom and daddy were. That it was about a communion of belief rather than a communion of blood. This is new. This is new. And everyone in the ancient world reacted strongly to that idea. It was weird to them. Very weird. The Roman Empire didn't know what to do with that. Like at all. They said, sure, you can be Christian, but you still have to worship the emperor and you still have to worship the Roman gods because you're Roman. And they're like, no, we're not going to do that. Like, what do you mean you're not going to do that? It's like saying you're not going to pay your taxes. You have to do that. That's part of what it means to be Roman. And this reality, dear brothers and sisters, should still be shocking to us today. That faith, religion, the call of God is free. Is free. Free to be itself. And let's come back to the gospel here, because Jesus appoints 72 others. It's a very important passage. Many of the fathers of the church took this, and later theologians took this to say, okay, the 12 apostles are the first bishops and the 72 are the first priests. Very accurate. But there's something else going on here too. 12 is the number of Israel. There were 12 tribes of Israel. So when Jesus called 12 apostles, it meant, I'm making a new Israel. 72 is probably a number we know less. But in the Bible, 72 represents the whole world. Because in Genesis chapter 6, when God lists all the nations of the world, there are 72 nations. So anytime you see the number 72 in the Bible, it means worldwide. And so Jesus is deliberately saying, my mission will be worldwide. Now, in order for that to be, there has to be a distinction. There has to be a distinction between the government and faith. And that's a distinction that nobody really likes. It's hard. We'd rather have the government impose faith on people. That's the normal human instinct. And we see how even in Christianity, this got twisted, especially toward the end of the Renaissance, where growing government power said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take religion and use it as another tool. And this is what happened with St. Thomas More. So King Henry VIII, who is in many ways a great king before this, wanted to divorce his wife and marry someone else. Well, you know you can't do that in the church, and you know that people do that anyway. But the difference is that for a king to do it, it would mean that his children by the second marriage would be illegitimate and therefore incapable of receiving or inheriting the British throne. And he's like, nope, I'm going to do it my way, and everybody's going to listen. And so he just said, I'm going to get remarried, and in order to do that, I'm declaring myself the head of the church in England. It's no longer the Pope, it's me. And with a snap of his fingers, he made everyone in his country supposedly not Catholic. And Thomas More, who was this brilliant man, who was a celebrated intellectual, who was incredibly funny. I really want to tell you all the funny stuff he did, but I'm going to leave that aside. He's the only saint that I read that makes me laugh out loud. Okay, so Thomas More, who is this incredibly cultured gentleman who is a friend of Henry VIII, is like, and was prime minister, he was chancellor. I can't do that. That's not okay. And Thomas More tried to avoid the confrontation. He said, look, man, Parliament can name whoever they want to be king. If your next child is illegitimate and Parliament says they're king, they're king. I don't care. But I can't support that you're the head of the church. I can't support you nationalizing religion and claiming that as your own. I can't. So he just retired. He resigned. I'm going to go back to my house. But the problem was that he was so popular that even when he shut up and said nothing, everyone was constantly asking, well, what does Thomas More think? 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 They wouldn't leave it alone. And so Henry kept on pressing and pressing and pressing Thomas More, like, you have to sign, you have to sign, you have to sign. And he's like, I will not. Well, that means that you do not believe that I'm the king. I do believe you're the king. Well, it's betrayal, and it's not. It went back and forth like this for a while. Finally, Henry had had enough, and he arrests Thomas More. And when Thomas More still won't sign to say that Henry is the king who is the head of the church in England, when Thomas More, in fact, resists on exactly this point, on the separation of church and state, on the fact that there must not be a government who controls faith, that's when he was killed. That's when he was killed. And I'm going to come back to that in a second, but dear brothers and sisters, I want you to understand, he died in the 1500s. That dynamic that was already at work in him just grew over the next two centuries, and that's why you had the pilgrims. That's why you had religious refugees to the United States. This is why they all came from England. It's because they wanted to practice faith and the king wouldn't let them. Because he had nationalized the faith and said it has to be this way. And a big reason the founding fathers went to war was for freedom of religion. that the government couldn't tell us how to worship. Now let's go back to Thomas More. Thomas More, you may know this, his last recorded words were, "I die the king's good servant, but God's first." There were other two things that he said that are just, to me, hilarious, and I'm going to tell you, and you have to laugh because they're funny, and you're not, like, everybody just stared at me yesterday. These are funny, all right? And I want to die like this. I want to die like this man. When he was led to the stage where he was going to be beheaded, he turned to the executioner. He was, like, in his late 60s at this point, I think, and said, "Good sir, could you help me up on stage? I should be all right coming back down." And then he had grown a beard in prison, because, you know, it's prison, it was the dungeon. And so they put his head down on the chopping block, and his beard came under his neck, and he stopped them. And he took his beard and fluffed it out and smoothed it on the side of the chopping block and said, "My beard, at least, hath not offended the king." Okay. Yes. Okay, so anyway. Dear brothers and sisters, Thomas More died because he believed in the freedom of the church. He died because he believed in the dignity of humanity. He died because he believed that governmental overreach here was wrong. But he only believed those things because that's exactly the implication of the gospel. Had he been another religion, the idea that the king controls religion would be obvious. And this is profound. This is profound. That even though our nation was founded as a secular nation, the values that it was founded on are found deeply in the gospel. So let's talk about freedom of religion for a second. If the government said tomorrow, "You can't come to Mass," how many of you would think that's wrong? Raise your hand. This should not be a difficult question. Okay. I wish the government would say that tomorrow. My church would be full. "They can't tell us what to do. I'm coming." Okay, fine. We all know that if the government tells you you can't come to church, that's wrong because freedom of religion. So what if your son's baseball coach tells you you can't? What if there's a sports tournament this weekend? What if there's a family vacation? What if your cousin drops by the house and makes you embarrassed to go to Mass? Why is it that you know that when the government impinges on your freedom of religion, it's wrong? But when life does, you just shrug and say, "Oh, well, it's a busy weekend." If the gospel needs to be sovereign, if the gospel needs to be free, if the gospel needs to have room to breathe, then it needs to have room to breathe not just from the government, but from everything else that tries to block it. Dear brothers and sisters, Thomas More died so that the gospel might be free. Our forefathers went to war so that their faith might be free. We celebrate these things today. And maybe sometimes we don't recognize the hypocrisy that we let everything else block faith. But should the government ever try, we'll go to war. Dear brothers and sisters, Jesus Christ came to set us free. He came to teach us the truth, and the truth will set us free. This weekend, as we celebrate freedom of religion, ask how free religion is in your own life, and whether or not you give the gospel room to truly set you free. God bless you all.